Wow. Well, good morning and welcome. For those of you who are with us for the first time, one of the things that we love to do here at Hoboken Grace is that we love to give you the chance to hear the stories of the people who are sitting right next to you. And for you to be able to see how God's working in different people's lives, that this idea that God is pursuing us, it isn't just a theory that we talk about, but that we're seeing it, we're experiencing it all the time, and it's happening all around us in so many different people's lives in so many different ways. And so this morning we wanted to give you a chance to be able to hear Brad's story. And I know what some of you are thinking. Some of you are sitting here thinking, wait a second. Is that the guy from the shower scene last week? And you're right, it is. Now, some of you have no idea what I'm talking about because you weren't here last week, but now you're intrigued, so you'll go back and watch last week online. But as we go into the day, we have so many different things. We have so many different things to celebrate as we walk into this morning. And we are coming out of a couple weeks here where God has just worked in really incredible, incredible ways through our church family. And before we get any further today, I just want to take a second and just remind us of this. Because I think it would be a huge mistake for us not to walk into this morning with just an incredible gratitude for what God has done and what God has allowed us to be a part of. Just a couple weeks ago, I know it feels like a month ago, but just a couple weeks ago, we had an Easter egg hunt. And at that Easter egg hunt, we had over 4,500 people register for that event. We were able to love thousands and thousands of people that day. It was amazing, right? And then you come out of that, we go into Good Friday, and this place was packed. Good Friday, this place was packed as we're walking through the beauty of what Christ communicated on that cross. And be able to do that together as a family, to be able to celebrate that way, it was amazing. And then we walk into Easter, and Easter morning, last weekend, we had 1,348 people that we were able to share the message of Jesus Christ with. That's amazing. We had 58 first-time guests last week. 58. Some of you know this. We write handwritten notes to all of our first-time guests. Anthony, that's Anthony's responsibility now. We had to get Anthony a professional masseuse just to keep his hand working this week because there's so many different cards. That's 58 people that we were able to share the grace and love of Jesus Christ with for the very first time. That's amazing. That's amazing. And then the other thing that amazed me coming out of last week is that we had 58 first-time guests, but that means that there was almost 1,300 people who weren't first-time guests. That's 1,300 people who are on this journey with us in some way, shape, or form that we're able to, that we're working to experience God together. We're working to love God and to be able to pursue Him the way that He's pursued us. That's phenomenal. What God's doing. And then last week, last Easter, I think most of you are aware of this by now, but last Easter we were able to give a gift to every person who used Uber from 6 a.m. to midnight last week. And we had set a cap on it, but we didn't reach that cap, and so we were able to love people all day long inside of our city. It was amazing. This week I got into an Uber and I was talking to the driver and I was just kind of curious. I was like, "Hey, listen, were you driving on Easter morning?" He's like, "Yeah, I was." He said, "You wouldn't believe it. There was this crazy church that did this thing." He's like, "It was every person that got in the car was talking about it, and so I had to look at it to see what was happening." And he started explaining it to me. He's like, "It was really cool, and people were confused about what was happening." And I was like, "Oh, that sounds cool." But it's been so amazing to see how people are stepping out of that and the conversations that are happening around that, and us being able to as First Peter says, us having the opportunity to give an answer for the hope that we have. For us to be able to step into different conversations and say to people, "You have to understand. I know it seems crazy to you, but you have to understand." And I loved it because I actually had this conversation with a reporter right here on this stage, and they came to talk to us about what was going on with the Uber situation. And she actually lives inside of Hoboken, and she was interviewing me, and she kind of came out of the interview, and she's like, listen, just what do you hope will happen from this? I said, really, what we hope will happen is that people will walk away and say, why? And she said, well, that's what's happening for me, so why? And I said, if you understood what we believe about Easter, you would understand that we couldn't possibly go too big for Easter. If you understand what we believe about what Jesus Christ did for us and how Jesus Christ gave his life for us and how Jesus Christ loves us, then you would understand that for us, we want to be able to love in any way that reflects that. And to watch her face, and she looked at me and said, I've never really heard someone talk about God that way. It's amazing. It's amazing. And I want to make sure that for all of us, as we walk through this and as we watch God working, and even as you hear Brad's story and you see how God's working, or in your own story, how you're experiencing God working, I want to make sure we never take that for granted. Because God doesn't have to do that. He doesn't have to do that. But he is. And so as we walk into this morning, we have so much to be grateful for. We have so much to celebrate as we're on this journey together. And as Justin said this morning, we're walking into a brand new conversation called Reckless Love. And I love the song that Dana sang earlier and how they mashed that up with both this picture and this song that's about how almost all of us, if not every single one of us, are deeply aware of the fact that in our lives there's something missing. And in the song, the writer talks about or communicates it with this idea of being hollow, and she's pursuing this relationship, she's pursuing this love in order to be able to fill her up, in order to be able to resolve that tension that really every single one of us lives with. That tension that we're not quite complete. That tension that no matter how hard we try, there always seems to be something that's missing. Even in Brad's story, you heard it, and he's talking about how he's pursuing all these different things to try to resolve that tension, how he's pursuing all of these different things in order to be able to fill that hollowness. And the reality is all of us have experienced it. All of us know what that songwriter's talking about. And we do. We try to fill it with a lot of different things, or maybe we try to run from it, or we try to cover it, we try to mask it. But it really is true that when it comes to filling that void, when it comes to, in some way, shape, or form, resolving that tension within us, it really is true that in this area, love conquers all. Love conquers all. And there's nothing that we believe will resolve that in us. There's nothing that we seek to fill that in us more than love. And we write songs about it, song after song after song, about how love completes us and how love gives us the opportunity to finally be whole and to finally come to that place where we're complete. Poets have given their lives to capture the essence of it. Some of you have tried to become a poet to capture the essence of it. You hope no one ever finds out. But we do. We live with this tension, this sense that there's something that's missing. And of all the things that we pursue to try to fill it, of all the things that we pursue to try to resolve it, the one that we pursue above all else is love. And we're told, and we believe that if I can just find the right relationship, if I can just find the right person, if I could just find the right girl, if I could just find the right guy, then finally it would be resolved. Then finally, and there's all sorts of things that we think it will resolve within us. And so we all do the same thing. We go looking for it. We go looking for it. And we live in a world that tells us that love is reciprocal. So if you want to find love, then you need to love and you need to be lovable. Because the way that love works is that I'm going to love and care about you, and you're going to love and care about me, and we're going to live inside of this mutually beneficial relationship where we're able to pour into one another, and you're able to receive back as you give to this other person. And we live in this world, and our culture says, listen, if you want to find that, and if you want to find the beauty of that, and if you want to find how that fulfills you and how that's going to complete you, then you need to be lovable. And so we try to become lovable in all sorts of different ways. And so some of us are like, I'm going to be lovable by being attractive. Others of us have realized that ship has passed. And so we're like, well, maybe I'll just work on my personality. And we try to do it in all sorts of different ways. And now there's all this stuff about emotional intelligence. And I've got to become more emotionally intelligent so that I can have better relationships. And all of it really comes down to, okay, how can I make myself lovable? And then how can I begin to love the people around me, hoping and seeking out this reality where finally I can find someone that I can love and they can love me back, and we'll be able to complete one another. And we'll finally be able to resolve that tension that we're longing for, that craving within us that says that something is missing. We're trying to find that person where it can finally be, I love you and you love me, and we're a happy family. We're finally looking to resolve that tension that Barney introduced to us so long ago. And then we find someone. And for a little bit, it seems like we're good. Because I love her, and she loves me, and it's amazing. And this is true with a lot of different things that we try to fill the hollowness with. For a little while, it works. For a little while, it seems like you're complete. But then life happens. And life has this amazing ability to break that down. And it breaks down for all sorts of different reasons. Sometimes it breaks down because truth is, we're just idiots. And sometimes we have no one to blame but ourselves for why it breaks down, because we make mistakes or because of the facts. And one of the things that God tells us is that we're broken. And so the reality is that no matter how hard you try, no matter how much you want to never disappoint the other person, no matter how much you want to make sure that you always love them back in the way that they love you, the truth is you're not going to be able to. Sometimes it breaks down for reasons that are outside of your control. Sometimes it's communication. And it breaks down not because one person decided to stop loving, but because there's just a breakdown in communication and you're on different pages, and all of a sudden you find yourself in a situation where it used to be that we loved one another, but somehow that stopped. It's interesting. One of the things that I've found in relationships is that oftentimes it breaks down because of cultural differences. We love to talk about and think about and look at love as if it's an objective thing. We like to talk about love like it's a gift. It's an objective thing that we can describe and we can define and we can hand it to someone else. But the truth is, your idea of love is different than mine. And just like we're all unique individuals inside this room, all of us have a unique idea of what love actually looks like. And we experience love in different ways. And so if I love you the way that I experience love, you won't actually feel loved. And I could say I'm loving you, but the truth is I'm not, because it has to do, love is not objective, it's subjective. And so sometimes it breaks down because of the fact that we don't understand the other person. There's all these different reasons. There's all these different reasons. But eventually, it breaks down. And sometimes we can pull it back together and we can get it going again, and we realize, okay, something's gone wrong here, and one of us has stopped loving because of a miscommunication or because something happened inside the relationship, so we've got to repair that and then we got to get it going again. But then sometimes it breaks down in a way that you can't repair it, at least not for a very long time. I experienced this inside of couples who've lost children. Oftentimes one of the individuals will lose their capacity to love. When you've experienced emotional trauma, it can actually deaden your ability to be able to love well. Sometimes it happens and you lose a job, and all of a sudden the world just kind of becomes numb to you, and there's all sorts of things that can send us down this path. But one of the things that all of us know, even though we might be ignoring it, all of us know that eventually it always breaks down. And we look at it, and we look at it, and for some of us, we think, well, the problem must be me. For some of us, we think the problem is them. Or maybe the problem was just the circumstance. Or maybe they just weren't the one. Maybe they just weren't the one. And if I just found my soulmate. But one of the things I hate, and some of you tell this story, and every time I do a relationship series, I say this because it's so very important. Because some of you are going around and you're married and you keep telling people, listen, when I met them, I knew they were the one. I knew it. They were the one. One of the things I've found about people like that is that they said that about every person they dated, okay? Up until that, if you say that about everyone, eventually you'll be right. But don't go around telling other people that, because then they're looking for the one. And it's just this idea, if I just find the right one, then it won't break down. But then you find the one who seems to be the right one. And it still does. And we have all sorts of ideas about how to be able to fix it. And maybe the problem is that we just have to get better at communication, or maybe the problem is that we just have to be better at learning how to love, and all those things are very important. But I would argue today, as we begin this conversation, I would argue today that the problem is not something that happens along the journey. The problem is where we started. I would argue that the problem is not something that happens along the way, but is the foundation upon which we're building. And you can be the best builder in the world, but if you build on a bad foundation, it doesn't matter. You can build the most beautiful house, but if you build on a bad foundation, it doesn't matter. And I think the problem is we keep trying to adjust the house, but we're still building on the wrong foundation. And so because of that, the way that we love becomes very reckless with the hearts of the people that we love. And I think as God steps into your life and my life, and he begins to talk about relationships, he doesn't talk as much about the house that's built on the foundation so much as he's trying to constantly call us to change the foundation, to change where we actually begin. I remember the moment at which God began to really work on me about this. And I was sitting in a common area of our dorm in college. And I remember as I was sitting there, I was listening to one of my dorm mates talk about a relationship that he had just ended that night. And there was some dispute about who ended it, but he was talking and sharing with us the fact that really, as he looked at it, he felt like it was a good relationship. And really what he was trying to describe to us was the fact that in the relationship, he'd won. And one of the things that he kept talking about, he said, you know, it was a good relationship, and I really enjoyed our time together, but really at the end of it, it seems like things didn't really work out. He said, but I really value our time together. And then he said something that struck me. He said, because throughout the entire relationship, she was always a little more into me than I was into her. And he went on to describe it, and he said, you know, she always went out of her way to love me a little bit more than I loved her. And so I really feel like as we come out of it, that I came out of it. And he didn't say it this way, but really what he was saying is that I came out of it the winner. And as I listened to him talk, I realized how much we actually think about relationships that way. Even though we may never put those words to our relationship, for many of us, we step into a relationship, and because of the fact that we believe in reciprocal love, we're constantly measuring how much is given and how much is received. Because along with the idea of reciprocal love comes the idea that you need to make sure that you don't find yourself in a situation where you're giving and giving and giving and nothing's coming back, because that's foolish. And as I listened to him talk, I heard him describe really the very way I look at relationships, this idea of give and take and making sure that you're monitoring the give and take and making sure that you do your best to stay a little bit ahead when it comes to the give as opposed to the take. And I remember sitting there thinking both about the way that we view relationships, but then also earlier that day I'd been reading through an interesting passage about Jesus Christ and how he went to the cross. And as I was comparing his conversation to what I had read that morning, all of a sudden, as I was listening to him talk, it hit me. You lost. And everything in our culture looked at the situation and would have looked at the situation and said, no, he won. He won. But when you look at what Jesus says, it changes that. When Jesus comes to teach us about love, he never uses someone else as an example. It's one of the things I love about God. He uses examples to teach us a lot of different things, but when it comes to love, he never uses someone else. So even when he's teaching us about marriage, he doesn't point to a great marriage. You don't see any stories in the Bible that are celebrating someone's marriage and how they loved one another. You don't see any of that throughout the entire scriptures, because he wants one example when it comes to how you love well, and that's just him. As a matter of fact, even when he's talking to us about marriage, he says specifically, listen, husbands, and what's the example that he gives? He says, I want you to love your wife. How? How I love the church. He constantly is calling you to pay attention to him when it comes to how you love well. And then when it comes to love, he steps into our lives and he begins to say to us some very interesting things. 1 John 4:11 says this, and we're going to come back to this in just a little bit, but I just want to introduce you some of the crazy things that God says about love. 1 John 4:11 says this. It says, dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is made complete in us. That word complete can also mean perfect.
Acts 20:35 is talking about something that Jesus taught his disciples. It says this. It says, "In everything I did, I showed you that by this kind of hard work, we must help the weak, remembering the words the Lord Jesus himself said, 'It is more blessed to give than to receive.'" And then there's this passage. This is the passage that I had read that morning as I had listened to my dorm mate that evening. Hebrews 12:2 says this. It says, "Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God." Now, it used to be that when I looked at this passage, I thought that the joy was the honor. I thought that the joy was the result. And so it used to be that I interacted with this passage and said, okay, Jesus went to the cross and he despised the shame of it. And as you look at the garden, you can tell it wasn't easy for him. He knew it was going to be extremely difficult. He knew that it was going to be painful. He knew that it was going to be awful, but he stepped into it. And it says, for the joy that was before him. And I used to think that the joy was the result, was the family that was going to be the result of what would happen at the cross, or the joy was going to be how the Father was going to honor him. Or that the joy was going to be how his name was going to be the name of all other names. And so this was the joy that he was pursuing. This was the joy that he was looking forward to. And so he despised the shame, and he knew the pain of it, but he decided to step into it. But as I sat there in that conversation, and as I began to think back on the other things that God has told us about love, things like it's actually better to give than to receive, or when he talks to us about how we actually complete or perfect God's love, not when we receive it. Let me take you back to this passage in 1 John 4, right? He says, he's talking about God's love and how we ought to love one another, how we give to one another. And then listen to this line. He says, "But if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is made complete or perfect in us." In other words, God's saying, listen, your greatest experience of God's love, your greatest experience of God's love, your greatest understanding of God's love, the perfect or the completeness of God's love is not when you receive it from God. It's when you give it away to someone else. And as I sat there and I was thinking about these different things that God's told us about love, all of a sudden it hit me. All of a sudden it struck me. The joy wasn't found in the result after the act. The joy is actually in the love. And one of the things that God is trying to teach us, and one of the things that God is trying to call us to, is this deep, profound reality that there is actually an incredible joy that's found in being poured out for someone else. That there's actually a joy that's found not in how you're going to love me back for how I love you, but that there might actually be a deeper joy in loving than in being loved. You see, if it's better to give than to receive, we look at the cross, we look at the cross, and we think, oh my goodness, look at how God loved us. And look at the joy that his love brought us when he goes to that cross. And we think the great joy in the story of the cross is our joy at being loved. But if it's actually better to give than to receive, the greatest joy at the cross was experienced by Jesus. Because the greatest joy is found in loving, not in being loved.
which is why God is constantly trying to work in our lives. To bring us to the point of self-forgetfulness. To bring us to the point where we change the foundation. You see, we've built our idea, we've built our whole concept and our construct of relationships and love based on the idea that it's better to be loved than to love. And Jesus steps in, and at the cross, above all other places, at the cross, he communicates a reality that is so, it is so foreign to us that it will take us a lifetime to learn, but it's worth a lifetime of learning. He steps in and says, no, you've got it backwards. It's actually better to love than to be loved. And you say, no, it's not, because then people, Jesus, you missed it. Then people will take you for granted, kind of like we do him. But he says, no. Even though they may mock you, even though they may deny you, even though they may reject you, the greater joy is found in loving. There's a deep and profound joy that's found in being poured out for someone else. It's a joy that not many of us have ever experienced, because we've never truly poured ourselves out for someone else without looking for the reciprocation. But God's love is not a love that's reciprocal. God's love is not a love that asks anything back, which is why for some of you, you struggle so much to believe in Jesus, because that kind of love is too good to comprehend. But his love is different than ours. It seems to God that reciprocal love may not be love at all. God's love flows one way. And the beauty of it is that he's calling us to be able to do that in one another's lives. But God's love flows one way. And he's calling us to transform the foundation. He's calling us to transform our minds. To actually trust him and believe him that it's better to give than it is to receive. To actually trust him that there's a deep and profound joy. And make no mistake about it, you have to trust him. Because if you go into it with the mindset of, I'm going to pour myself out for this person, because if I pour myself out for this person, if I love this person the way that God calls me to love this person, if you go into it with the mindset, but there's still that lie there, because if I do this, then they're going to love me better. Or if I do this, then it's going to work out. Or if I do this, then I'm going to enjoy the fruit or the results of it. If you go into it with still that reciprocal mindset, you'll miss the joy. And so God steps in and says, no. You have to leave that behind. And you have to decide to step into the lives of people around you and trust me that there's a deep joy and being poured out for them. As we walk through this series, we're going to talk through, because I know some of you are looking at that and you're thinking, that's reckless. And the truth is that the way that Jesus calls us to love, our culture often looks at that and says, no, that's reckless. If I do that, I'm going to get hurt. If I do that, and over the course of this series, we're going to talk about this and how Jesus is teaching us to love in a way that sometimes seems reckless, but in a way that changes the whole paradigm. It doesn't just change the house, it changes the very foundation. As we come out of this week, I have one question for you. And it's different based on where you are in your life and based on the conversation that you're having now. And so for some of you, you're here today and you're committed to someone and you're married. And you've made that commitment and you've made vows to that person. I want you to ask yourself as you move through this week. I want you to ask yourself and to be honest with yourself. If they never love you back, if they never reciprocate, are you still willing to pour yourself out for them? For some of you are here and you're dating. You're dating. And you're trying to figure out whether you're going to spend the rest of your life with this person. I want you to ask yourself the same question. Are you willing to make a commitment to them that if they never love you back, that if something happens and they lose their ability to love you, if they're never able to reciprocate, are you willing to commit to pour yourself out for them? For those of you who are looking, are you looking for someone to love you? Or are you looking to pour yourself out for someone else? Now, here's the thing. Listen very closely. Listen. Do not miss this. Don't make decisions on this week. Okay? I don't need like 20 breakup stories happening inside of our story right this week. Okay? Listen. Because here's what we all know. For at least for most of us, with where we are today, for most of us, the answer to the question is no. Because we don't understand what we're going to talk about next week. Do not make any decisions until we have the conversation we're going to have next week. Will you pray with me? Father, as we talk through this and as we look at this incredible reality that you're trying to introduce to us, but it's so foreign from our reality, it's so foreign from what we believe and what we understand about love, that the deepest joy is found not in being loved. The deepest joy is found not in loving so that I can be loved, but the deepest joy is actually found in exactly what you did for us on that cross, that you poured yourself out for us unconditionally. No matter how we would respond, no matter how we would reciprocate. Father, I pray that the next few weeks would be transformational in our lives and our relationships as we learn the beauty of how you passionately, and it almost seems sometimes recklessly, loved us. and how we can do that for the people around us. In Jesus' name.